Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning and welcome to Taste Matters with Mitchell Davis. I'm your host, Mitchell Davis, Executive Vice President of the James Beard Foundation. And every Wednesday at 11 o'clock in the morning, we have a conversation that I hope you find interesting about food and taste, two topics that are really one topic, but that I think are not always given enough airplay in our current media food-obsessed moment. And today, I'm very excited to be talking to someone who I think is one of the great tastemakers of Japan, which is actually saying something, considering the amazing culinary heritage and contributions that we have to thank Japan for. In the studio, I have the chef Shin Takagi from Ishikawa Prefecture, the city of Kanazawa, one of the very wonderful traditional culinary destinations of Japan. Thank you for joining us here in Bushwick, Brooklyn.
Thank you. This is my great pleasure to be here.
Well, it's really our pleasure. And I wanted, Shin, to, before we talk a little bit about your unique philosophy about food and sort of your experiences around the world, we run into each other in all sorts of great places, New York, Copenhagen, all of the great food centers of the world. But I wanted to talk a little bit with you about the unique style of cooking you do called kaiseki, which I know we hear a lot, we think about a lot when we think of Japanese food here in America, but I'm not sure everyone understands because we put it into the same context as sort of haute cuisine in France, but it's something very different with a much bigger meaning. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. Basically, to explain about kaiseki, we need a long time.
Well, we only have 30 minutes.
Yes, I know. But first of all, I'd like to say the kaiseki is based on tea ceremony.
Uh-huh.
Then, Mitchell, do you know the green tea?
Yes, of course. Yes.
But we do have two kinds of green tea, the light one and the heavy one.
Okay.
Then the formal tea ceremony is to drink the heavy green tea.
That powder, the thick, yes. Frothy powder.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Then before I drink such a strong green tea, we have to prepare some kind of things for stomach.
Hmm.
So that's why before drink green tea, the host prepares some small meals. That is the start of kaiseki.
Okay. So already it has an unusual, unexpected context in eating. It isn't just a fancy dinner. It's related to a specific...
No, it is not so fancy.
Okay.
So if you see the real kaiseki, you will be surprised because too small portion, mm-hmm. and not so fancy and take a long time.
Mm-hmm.
If you join a formal tea ceremony, you have to expect to be there at least 5 hours.
Yes, sitting on your knees or
yeah, but it's up to you.
it's difficult. It's,
yes.
trying. And I've been to several ceremonies and you don't always know what's happening,
mm-hmm.
because it's so much based on traditions that you,
yes.
either understand or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what I enjoyed at your wonderful restaurant, Zenia, in Kanazawa.
But I have to say, I have to talk about that when I talked to, I explained kaiseki,
mm-hmm.
at first.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, kaiseki mean two types of cuisine. The one is what I did talk from tea ceremony,
mm-hmm.
and the other one is what you enjoyed in my restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Then the kaiseki, what I prepared, most of Japanese restaurant prepared is prepared maybe more than 8 or 9 dishes.
Mm-hmm.
Then using seasonal ingredients, and also prepare sashimi and vegetables, and using some dashi.
Mm-hmm.
those kind of
dashi things. Being the sort of umami rich broth.
Yes.
Just
yes.
to explain.
Yes. Okay. Dashi is made by bonito and kombu.
Right.
Sometimes we do use only kombu, or sometimes we do use like a shiitake, dry shiitake mushroom.
Right.
Yeah.
But a real, the undercurrent, the sort of umami richness of yes. Japanese food comes in part from the dashi.
Yes. But now I think if you say umami, is many I think many American people know it much more than Japanese.
Really?
Yes. About umami.
Oh, interesting. Well, it has become, in a very short time, it's become part of the natural conversations about taste, the yes. fifth taste. We when I grew up, there were only four tastes, uh-huh. sweet, sour, salty, and bitter.
Yeah.
And 10 years ago, they added one. It's like your whole world changes, umami. So let's talk about specifically you and your culinary history. Zaniya is your main restaurant, what we would call here a flagship restaurant.
Yes.
It's a beautiful, elegant old restaurant. Can you tell us a little bit about the history of Zaniya?
Yes. Zaniya, which is my restaurant, is started by my parents in 1970. Mm-hmm. And at the time, my father was also chef. Mm-hmm. Then he prepared less than 8 courses for dinner. Mm. But now I'm prepared almost 10 to 12 courses.
Okay.
And each portion getting smaller and smaller. Then in my restaurant, they have 8 counter seats. How do you understand? How do you say counter?
Like counter?
Yeah, sushi
eight,
counter.
Eight counter seats? Sure.
Yeah, 8 counter seats. And I have 6 private rooms. Uh-huh. And the maximum seat in my restaurant is about less than 60.
Okay, wow. Yeah. And there you cook your own style of kaiseki food.
Yes.
And when you say seasonal, I think you should explain that a little bit, because it isn't just winter, spring, summer, fall. The seasons are a little bit different in Japan.
Yes. In Japan, it depends on which part of Japan, but mostly we have 4 seasons, mm-hmm. Spring, summer, and autumn, and winter. Mm-hmm. Then each season has each very nice ingredients. But if I talk about my idea, my mm-hmm. philosophy of kaiseki, is I think of season not only 4 but 12. Mm-hmm. The beginning of and middle and end of each season has each characters.
So early spring, middle yes. spring, late spring, yes. into fall. Right.
Yes. Late spring and early summer is very similar, okay. but a little bit different.
And that's determined by the ingredients, in by the weather, by what?
Well, if you take off your jacket, you will feel almost summer is coming. Mm-hmm. But if you take put on a jacket, or almost winter is coming. Mm. Those kind of feelings makes the guest some kind of expectation what they want to have in the restaurant.
Interesting. So you're reminding me of what you spoke at. You addressed the crowd at the Mad Food Symposium about the lengths that you go to as a Japanese kaiseki chef in having a conversation or cooking for the guest, and sort of having a dialogue between the guest as before they arrive, and then as the experience happens, and then perhaps even the next time they're there. Could you talk a little bit about how you cook for someone in your restaurant?
Well, at first, I have to say that we don't have a menu book in my restaurant.
Okay.
Then for example, when Mitchell tried to make a reservation in my restaurant, my operator will ask you, where do you come from? And do you have anything you don't like to eat or allergy? And what do you want to eat? And she will ask you several questions. Then she will give to me those information. Then I will think some menus. Mm-hmm. Then finally, the day that you come in the morning, I go to the market. Mm-hmm. Then check the ingredients. Then I will finalize the menu. But that is not finished. Mm-hmm. Because during your dinner, sometimes menu has changed a lot during the dinner. So that's why I can say that what you can eat is, please ask me after dinner.
Because you don't know before.
Yes, exactly.
So this is a phenomenon that fascinates me, especially lately. I, as someone who, you know, has the good fortune of eating in a lot of different places, I've noticed a trend in restaurants, especially in restaurants that are set up almost to look like a like your restaurant, a counter seating, which is a new trend in New York and elsewhere. Here at Roberta's, actually, Blanca just received its first Michelin star. We took a look at the kitchen and the restaurant for 12 seats around a counter. And yet here it's more of a performance of the chef cooking what he or she is going to cook, and everyone gets the same, and everyone, you sort of feel grateful to be there. And what you're describing is a very different relationship between what happens on each side of the counter, that there actually is some relationship between what the chef is cooking and thinking and what's happening. Can you talk about how that affects the experience of the person a little bit, both you and the guest?
Well, actually, we are not a kind of artist. I think of the chef is a chef must be a kind of craftsman. So what we have to do and what our duty is to make the guest happy. So sometimes if the guest want me to do some like a performance or those kind of things, I will do, but some guests doesn't like to see that. To talk with a girlfriend, to boyfriend.
Right.
With family, so in that case, I don't talk too much.
Right.
Then sometimes only one gentleman sit on the counter. I will talk to him and where do you come from and what do you want to eat. So each case it what we have to do is depend on what kind of guest,
right?
About and which kind of situation.
So and that's a very generous concept of hospitality, that it's not about you as much, although certainly, you know, you stand there quite proudly in this beautiful kitchen and everyone can see, but it's, you're not the show, you are there to help make the experience of the person.
I'm not rock star, so.
Well, you are rock star in my world, Chin, but not rock star yet, let's say. But you do have multiple restaurants. You have a second restaurant in Kanazawa.
Yes.
And you have a restaurant in Seoul, Korea, the first kaiseki restaurant in Korea.
Yes, exactly. We opened it in last July. Then we have 10 counter seats and 2 private rooms. Then Korean people love to eat sushi, especially in this 20 years. But unfortunately, there's no kaiseki restaurant. So that's why I found a Korean partner to open the first kaiseki restaurant in Korea.
And it's well received? People enjoy it?
Yes. It just started 3 months, but now they are doing very well.
Fantastic. I'll remind people listening that if you have any questions, now's your chance to find to speak to an articulate and very, very talented Japanese chef. You can call us at 718-497-2128, or you can email us your questions at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Or if you're listening to the podcast or you just like to communicate in 140 character tweets, you can tweet us at Taste Matters HRN. So Shin, tell me a little bit about the region you come from. You're sort of an ambassador for that area, and the Ishikawa Prefecture occupies a beautiful place, I noticed, in the minds of Japanese people. When we said we were going there, they were so excited that we were going to visit. Can you tell me a little bit about the history and the food culture of that area?
Yes. Most of foreign people think of Japan as a beautiful country, and they all imagine Tokyo, Kyoto, and Osaka. But Kanazawa is one of the oldest city in Japan, and almost as long, much older than Tokyo. Then the Kanazawa is located by Japan Sea, so we do have a lot of fresh seafood from local ocean. And also we do have a beautiful mountain we call the Hakusan. So that's why we do have many kind of like mountain vegetables, like mushroom, wild mushroom and wild fruit. And also we do have such a nice GBA, like a wild duck and boar and sometimes bear.
Wow. And do you use all of those in depending on the season and the setting in your restaurant?
Yes, I one of my favorite ingredients is a wild duck, but unfortunately not bear and boar.
No. Or maybe fortunately, who knows? Although I bet in your hands it would be delicious. Yeah. We are talking with Shin Takagi, who is the chef of Zenia in Kanazawa, the capital city of Ishikawa Prefecture in Japan. And we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
National Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Welcome back to Taste Matters with Mitchell Davis. I am talking to Shin Takagi, the chef of Zenia, a wonderful restaurant in Kanazawa, Japan. Shin, for years, chefs from around the world have come to Japan for inspiration and for sort of a finishing school. In some ways, I think an experience in Japan has surpassed the need to go to France and see what's happening there, because so many of the interesting traditions have found their way into the current haute cuisine outside the world. And yet I think we believe that what happens in Japan is sort of preserved there, that it's tradition and it doesn't change. But I imagine there are trends in Japanese cooking, as there are everywhere. Is anything going on right now that interests you in Japan and trends in Japanese food?
Most of foreign people think of Japanese cuisine as looks like just Japanese, but we do use a lot of foreign ingredients from a long time ago. For example, the famous Japanese restaurant named Kicho, which has a Michelin 3-star in Kyoto, where I had been working, they are using like a caviar or foie gras since the 1960s.
Oh, really?
Then after that, like in my generation, I think we don't like to use those kind of things. We always try to find local ingredients. But still, now, kind of trend of Japanese cuisine, I mean Japanese restaurant, is using Western dishes.
Oh, really?
Yes, because for foreign guests. And also, the presentation has changed little by little. Not looks like a traditional, but also looks like sometimes French or sometimes Italian.
And so one of the things that just amazed me in Japan was how much media is devoted to food. You know, every time you turn on TV, there's a show about the top 100 restaurants that serve whatever. You know, you could pick any dish. And does the media pick up on these things, and do they populate people's minds? Do people come with expectations to your restaurant?
Especially the TV.
Yes.
TV program or that kind of things is why they make that kind of program is because of saving the cost.
What do you mean?
Well, if you, we they ask to come to a famous actor or actress, they have to pay a lot of money, but to look around the restaurant is much cheaper.
So Japan invented reality television before yes. America also, not just great food things. That's exactly why reality TV is so popular now.
Yes. And but about magazine, yeah. Some magazine always try to find some small but very good new idea and a new restaurant still what? Now.
When an interesting restaurant opens in New York, the first people in are Japanese media, always. Whether it's television or writers or magazines, without fail. They,
oh, really?
They know about it before. A lot of people in New York
oh,
know
really?
About
they
it.
They have yeah. to do that in Japan, too.
Yeah, funny. So unlike some of your colleagues, however, you actually do a lot of traveling and cooking outside. I know that you're close friends with some of the great chefs in the world, and I wonder how that experience is unique for you and also how that affects what you do in your very traditional restaurant.
Yes. Well, in 1986, I was a foreign exchange student.
Oh.
Spent 1 year in Elmira, New York. It's upper state.
In Elmira, New York.
Yes. Do you know
wow.
that?
Yes, of course I know Elmira.
It was a very nice city.
The Finger Lakes.
It's a very nice town for studying.
Uh-huh. Right. That's about yes. it. Not for eating so
yeah.
much.
Yes. But since then, I'm always trying to go out of Japan. Not only for study, but also to see another kind of another world.
Mm-hmm.
Then now I'm since I start working as a chef, I feel that kind of limit of chef the world in Japan.
Mm.
I mean, kaiseki chef,
mm-hmm.
Because many foreign guest chef like Alain Ducasse, Joel Robichon, or Italian Blood come up to Japan to mm-hmm. prepare their special meals, but not so many Japanese kaiseki chef going out to
right.
prepare dinner. Then, you know, for example, like Rolling Stones, sometimes played in Moscow or China, but I'm sure they don't understand English at all. But
right.
they really enjoyed the Rolling Stone music.
Right, of course.
Yeah. So that's why I believe that people who doesn't know Japanese cuisine exactly, but they will, they have a kind of possibility to enjoy
uh-huh.
our meals. So those kind of things are my challenges.
Your challenge. And so when you go and you prepare a meal in New York, as I was had the fortune of attending once, or in other places around the world, are you bringing everything with you and trying to recreate what you do, or are you trying to take what you do and your techniques and your tradition and apply it to what you find?
When I prepared the dinner in New York City first time is 2008.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, I brought many, many ingredients from Kanazawa,
mm-hmm.
but that was only one time. Then mostly, I always try to use local ingredients.
Mm.
In sometimes in Hong Kong, sometimes in Seoul, Maldives,
mm-hmm.
Italy.
And what do you what do you think about the quality of the ingredients you find? I guess like everywhere, there's good and there's bad.
Yes, but that's kind of thing is fun for me. Then those kind of conditions of quality of ingredients makes me very exciting and also. Push me to find out a new idea for a new recipe.
Interesting. So we have a question from someone, actually, who has been to your restaurant.
Oh, really?
Yes. I've had the great fortune of being a guest at your restaurant, and the attention to the guest is so incredibly personal, it seems to be an all-out family affair. His question is, what is your opinion of the relationship between hospitality and taste?
Mm-hmm.
And does the way that you make a guest feel, do you think, impact the way people experience the food, actually taste the food?
Well, kind of very difficult question.
It is, but I think it's but let me ask it a slightly different way,
yeah.
Because one of the things that I have always felt in my visits to Japan is that there are, in Japan, there are more than five tastes. Let's say here we have five tastes. But actually, when Japanese eat things, they the tastes resonate with other aspects of the food, the history, the tradition, their awareness. Like you said, that feeling of putting on your jacket or taking off your jacket, that there's such a, among some connoisseurs in Japan, there is such a refinement of the sensory experience of eating that tasting is more than just sweet, sour, salty, and umami. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's something to that?
Yes. That's sometimes... That's not only from one particular function. Sometimes mixtured and sometimes feel like drinking sake and tea or water makes taste different. And also depend on the health condition of the guest. So I always try to prepare something perfect, but the people who try to eat by themselves is most difficult
To figure out.
Yeah, figure out.
So let me say someone were coming to your restaurant who was a great Japanese food writer from Japan.
Yeah.
Or there was a great French food writer coming to your restaurant. Would you cook differently for those two people?
Completely
differently. Completely differently.
Yeah.
Can you explain a little bit what your thinking would be a little?
Well, I need to know how old and... I mean, the French journalist. How old, and I will ask them how many times have we been in Japan, and especially in Kanazawa. And if they, their trip to Kanazawa was the first time, I will prepare kind of very traditional cuisine from our region, and using local ingredients. And for Japanese journalist. I will ask him. I will ask them. What would you like to see?
Right, right.
Directly,
because they have a very different exposure to things.
Yes, exactly.
Well, you make me excited to make plans to come back, since I was there once and we had some of the wonderful dishes. I mean, I have to. It's hard to articulate to people listening what a what a thrill it was, really, to in the morning have walked with you through the market in town, and asked questions about things we hadn't seen or heard you tell us about things we didn't notice. And then we realized at some point during our dinner that everything we ate, we had asked about. Like you had, somehow your magicians had managed to pull together aspects of our conversation that resonated in the meal we had. It was really, it was a thrill. It was like, wait, this is that fish, or this is that mushroom, and this is that thing that we had talked about. It was an amazing realization.
Yeah.
And made for a very unique experience, I have to say, all
that's
around.
That kind of market tour, it always makes guests exciting.
It's true.
Yeah. Like, for example, the chef Alain Ducasse spent more than 2 hours in the market.
Wow.
Where you've been. And he always trying to taste without anything, just raw fish and raw shrimp and raw vegetables. And he was trying to taste the original one. Also Michel Trovagro also did almost same things.
In the few minutes, we just have 2 minutes left actually, I wanted to talk about ask you two things. One is a big question, I realize, but where does your inspiration come from for these sorts of things? You're a young man. In fact, you are involved in a young chefs association in Japan, I understand.
Yes.
And yet you sort of draw on these long traditions of Japanese food and maintain a modern perspective, getting out around the world, talking to other chefs. And so I'm just wondering, how do you, within the parameters of kaiseki, Japanese cuisine, Kanazawa regional cooking, how do you find inspiration for the dishes that you make and the new things that you create?
Well, my idea is basically based on tradition. Tradition is not only come from the kaiseki tradition, but also our whole lifestyle. So sometimes I still remember that my grandmother prepared some special crab. And that special crab was not so expensive, very cheap one, but they're really good taste because it's fresh and kind of mom's taste. So everything, whole my experience in my life, give me inspiration of idea.
Well, we're very glad that it does. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you so much.
The time went very quickly, much faster than an experience at Zenia. For those of you who happen to find your way to Kanazawa, it's definitely worth a detour, as the Michelin folks would say. Next week, we are very fortunate. We have a special guest here for the James Beard Foundation Leadership Awards. We're going to have an hour show with Wendell Berry, who is really the chief philosopher and practitioner of the agrarian farm movement that we find ourselves in, a great writer, a celebrated poet, and one of the inspirations behind the entire world's movement towards local, regional, sustainable farming. We're so excited that he'll be here in the studio with us, and we hope you'll listen. In the meantime, eat something delicious.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. Heritage Radio Network is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phone, Kindle Fire, and other devices with Stitcher. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.